Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we talk about how we can make this happen, how we can integrate creativity and creative thinking and curiosity into our practice. I share ideas and strategies. I talk about some frameworks, I interview experts, I tell stories about things that worked, but also those big epic fails I've made along the way. And all because I genuinely believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And one topic I get into on this podcast is artificial intelligence and the ways in which it is changing learning and the ways that we can approach it. It's something that I get into in my book, The AI Roadmap. And today in particular, we're going to be talking about this notion of AI integration. It can feel overwhelming with so many tools and strategies. And you might be wondering, where do I start or what do I do? If you go to spencereducation.com, there is within my site an AI hub. But I actually think that before you even go through any of that, one of the things that you might want to think about before integrating AI into your lessons with students is that we should actually start with a series of questions, that we should start from a place of curiosity. And so on today's podcast, I want to share 7 different questions to ask before having students use AI tools. So here they are. Number one, what are the learning tasks? So over the last couple of years, I've had the honor of delivering keynotes on AI, conducting full-day workshops. I was just in suburban Atlanta last week doing an AI-related workshop with a school there. And one of the questions I often get is, when is it okay for students to use AI? And often the goal is to nail down a specific school-wide policy that everyone should adhere to. And some schools have even developed a table or chart of like when the help is acceptable versus unacceptable. And I think that these charts are helpful. They're really good for clarity and for the sense of unity that they offer. But I wonder sometimes if it might work best to use that type of chart more on individual assignments or projects or within specific classrooms, because the truth of the matter is AI usage and integration is going to vary based on the lesson, the assignment, the learning task, and the courses that you're teaching. In the long run, if we want students to learn how to use AI ethically and wisely, we need to spark this sense of curiosity and critical thinking in them so that they pay attention to the context in hand and ask, is this a time that I want to use AI? And in a sense, what we're developing in them is a set of skills, but also a mindset of critical thinking. And again, it's going to vary from class to class. Or song. Case in point, let's think about teaching like a coding class, right? So if you're teaching programming or coding to students, you might be really tight with whether or not students can use generative AI to create any kind of computer code. And I get it. It makes sense. You want students to learn how to code by hand. You want them to know the nuts and bolts of it. And then after mastering the language, they might use AI-generated code as sort of a time-saving device. By contrast, if you're teaching maybe a history class and students want to demonstrate their understanding of historical concepts by designing a game, you might allow them to use AI-generated code as they actually create this game that they might want to use in a history class. It might feel like cheating for a student in a film class to use AI video editing, but AI-generated jump cuts are going to save loads of time in a science class where they're going to demonstrate their learning through a video. In a film class, it's critical for students to learn how to edit by hand to tell a story. But in science, those jump cuts allow them to create videos more quickly. And I think it's really important to understand that this is not a new thing, right? Technology makes the creative process faster and cheaper. That has been around for a long time. So what we need to do is we need to ask, what are we learning and how does AI fit into it? If you're thinking about larger, you know, AI policies, I think we need to design policies that are broad enough that everyone can follow them, but also allow for students and teachers to use AI ethically and wisely. So giving educators some leeway in how they use AI, researching how AI is used in different disciplines, allowing teachers to give clear expectations for how AI is used in a given assignment. And really what we're going for is something that's flexible, but also where there's a sense of unity within the entire institution, whether it's a K-12 school or higher education, so that everyone follows a policy, but there's wiggle room built into it. So with that in mind, that's the first idea. Number one, again, is what are the learning tasks? But we also need to ask a second question, which is closely related. How will we ensure that the AI supports rather than replaces the thinking process? So we start with the learning process, but now let's actually think about the thinking process in particular. And to do so, I'm going to share a brief example. I live in Salem, Oregon, and I've been here for almost a decade, but I still have moments where I struggle to orient myself around town. I hear people refer to landmarks, and I'm like, I don't know where that is. Or I'll be driving in a certain area of the city and I have to reorient myself and be like, am I in the north side, in the south side, am I southwest, northeast, wherever it may be. And this, by the way, is a sharp contrast to where I used to live, which was Phoenix, Arizona. And that's where I spent my formative driving years memorizing key locations and keeping this mental map of the city in my mind with all of its sprawling suburbs, all of its 2.5-3 million, whatever it may be, within that greater Phoenix area. And this is a small example of something called cognitive atrophy. Just as a muscle can atrophy when we don't use it, our brains can experience a similar process with thinking processes. And this isn't new. This has been going on for millennia. Modern humans, for example, we know this, especially within the last 50 years or so, but modern humans don't memorize anywhere near as much text as they did 200 or 300 years ago. We know that there was a time where humans were just capable of memorizing information more quickly and retaining it for a longer amount of time. But on the other hand, we are much better at analytical reasoning, creative thinking, all these different things that we've gained in the last couple hundred years. So as we think about the use of AI, we need to be cognizant of that notion of cognitive atrophy. I love the Q&A nature of a chatbot, but I want to make sure that we don't lose out on productive struggle. I love that students can get instant answers, but I want to make sure that we don't lose out on the role of confusion or boredom in the learning process. I think it's great that AI can help with ideation, but I never want it to be the default in brainstorming. I want students going back to their own prior knowledge. I think it's great that you can use AI-generated text or images, but I still think it's important that students learn how to draw and write from scratch. You know, writing itself is important for the sake of making meaning. So as we engage in lesson planning, it can help to make a T-chart, or if you are a child of the 80s like me, you could have a Mr. T-chart, and you could pity the fool, right? And on one hand, you have human thinking. On the other, you have machine thinking. And the reality is, in almost every text, we use our technology. So machine, you could call it tech. We do this all the time. And there are things that we lose when we engage with technology. So for example, I just wrote a blog post connected to this podcast. Well, what am I losing by writing a blog post? Well, I'm typing, and when we type rather than handwrite, you lose out on the personality of your writing. Writing is actually much more memorable when you handwrite rather than type. So for example, if you're engaging in note-taking, you will retain more information when you handwrite your notes rather than type your notes. So we lose some things when we use technology. That's a recognition. I'm going to miss out on some of that. And with things like spell check, we get instant feedback, which is great. But if we're running on autopilot, we run the risk of never learning how to correct our spelling. And that becomes an issue of you know, maybe our spelling gets worse. When we use spreadsheets or calculators, we sometimes forget to engage in number sense and ask questions like, is this reasonable? So it's really important as we use our technology to have this sort of T-chart where we say, what is the human thinking involved? What is the machine learning involved? Or what is the machine thinking or the technology thinking involved? And then when you look at those, that tech side, ask, what are we losing? Because the goal is not to simply use technology all the time or AI all the time. It is to ensure that the learning continues to happen. So it's really important that we take this, I use the term vintage innovation, where we use both lo-fi and high-tech tools in a way that increases the learning. That leads to this third question, which again is also centered on learning, and it is, how does this AI tool align with what we know about how the brain works? So if I'm going to connect machine learning to human learning, I need to consider the way that the human brain actually functions. If I'm using AI as a time management tool or a project management tool or something like that, it's going to be really helpful for me to pay attention to human motivation and to ask, what type of motivational technique does this AI use? So I have this sketch video. You can find it at spencervideos.com. And you'll notice I share the continuum of self-determination theory from DC and Ryan, and this idea of extrinsic and intrinsic motivation. And so ask yourself, as you are playing around with an AI tool, what is it saying about motivation? You know, you might be using AI for goal setting. Well, that would be identified regulation within self-determination theory. Or you might be using it to create badges and a system of gamifying your learning. Well, in that moment, it's extrinsic motivation. So the goal here is to really pay attention to it. You also might use AI in a way that's going to connect to information processing theory. And so this is the notion of moving information from short-term to long-term memory from a very brain-based perspective. And one of my favorite examples of this is to use AI for studying. So if you work with high schoolers or college students, this is actually a great integrated use of AI. I'm not going to go through the entire process. You can go to spencereducation.com and find a detailed step-by-step process listed here. But what you do is you gather your work and you upload it. And so this is a study technique. And what we know about study techniques, I should rewind for just a second here, is that certain techniques are not good retrieval practice. So if a student rereads a text, that's an ineffective study technique. It doesn't work very well. If they highlight text, that's only moderately helpful. It's typically not very helpful to highlight text as a study technique. On the other hand, testing yourself is really effective because it lets you know, what you don't know, and what to do next. And not only that, but it creates that retrieval practice that they need for the learning to stick. So what students do is they begin by uploading their work to a chatbot like ChatGPT, or you know, they might be using Gemini. And note that in terms of using Gemini, all you need is a Google account for that. It's actually gotten really good as a tool. And you can use Gemini even if you're a Scorpio or a Pisces or a Virgo or whatever. So you're going to upload your work, and then you're going to analyze trends. So you're going to tell the chatbot to look at your student work and look at trends of what you got right, what you got wrong, and then maybe even ask for additional resources, some skill practice to do, some worksheets, things like that. And what you're doing is you're finding out, what do I not know and how can I relearn this? And then when that process is done, in step 3, you'll create targeted multiple choice questions that get progressively harder. And I share a specific process of how to do this. And then you can track your progress over time. And again, what am I doing in this moment? I'm using in an AI in a way that aligns to what we know about brain-based learning. Question number four to ask is, how is machine learning changing the learning domain? And what I mean here is, yeah, we want to start with student learning, of course. So the first few questions that we started were, you know, how does this align to the learning task? How does it align to thinking? And how do we ensure there's no cognitive atrophy? And then how do we align this to our understanding of the human brain? But we also need to recognize that there's power in new technology, and it changes the way we learn. For example, in a CTE class, we might ask, how does a particular industry use machine learning, and how can we prepare students for that reality? In a science class, we might ask, in what ways will AI transform our understanding of the world, and how do we adjust the learning tasks as a result? So I want you to imagine this as sort of a cycle, a reciprocal relationship between technology and learning. And this has been around for a long time. Our learning tasks end up changing the way that we use technology, but our technology impacts the way that we engage with learning tasks. So we can think about it again as AI and learning, where we start with the learning standards and the use of AI, but then we ask, how is AI transforming those standards and then modify the standards themselves? So we see this in other domains. In reading, for example, we now include multimedia content creation. We include the ability to decode digital graphics. The research standards are heavily infused by language related to the internet. And that's an example of the technology changing the learning tasks. We've integrated the internet into online research in ways that seems seamless because it's just what we do on a regular basis. But that was an intentional decision by those who crafted the standards. So what does that mean for something like AI? Well, I think we're going to see new definitions emerge around things like media literacy and information literacy. If you go back to previous podcast episodes that I did with Jennifer Lagarde or Alec Koros, they both talked about the ways that we are going to have to rethink information literacy in an age of AI. So we're going to keep that in mind. We also have to ask this next question, question number five. What are the ethical implications I should consider? So it's going to start by asking basic questions about AI and policies. And if you live in the US like I do, it's things like FERPA, COPPA, CIPA, acceptable use policies, ADA compliance. All of those things are at a basic level what we need to pay attention to. But I think it goes a lot deeper than this. At a basic level, yes, we need to know data privacy, but we also need to delve deeper into the ethics of AI in a way that goes beyond just policy compliance. And what that means is we need to ask really hard questions about, is it ethical here to use AI? And I'm going to give you an example. If you consider the role of pro-social robots, we've already seen this with therapy chatbots that can help students who are dealing with mental health challenges. For example, Wobot engages users in conversations that encourage self-reflection, cognitive restructuring to help change a person's mental scripts. It's using cognitive behavioral therapy techniques, or CBT, in a way that might help students who are dealing with ADHD, anxiety, depression, OCD, mood disorders, all kinds of different mental health challenges. But what are those ethical implications of using these chatbots? Are they a form of therapy, or are they replacing the role of an empathetic human therapist? We need to engage in these hard conversations because it's important that we ask, you know, where do we want machines to be used in our world? Is this similar to using a journal to pay attention to your mental scripts? In that sense, it seems to be almost humanizing a tool that we would use. Or is it replacing something really important like an actual human counselor? And so I think it's really important that we engage in those dialogues. Or consider the use of AI in crafting chatbots where students talk to fictional characters or have fictional conversations with historical figures. Many of us are okay with a historical figure in historical fiction, right? So we're fine with you including Abraham Lincoln and something that's set in the 1850s or 60s, early 60s. But the truth is, given what we know about the Eliza effect, which is where we tend to treat chatbots as being human even when they're not, it can feel kind of gross, in fact, a little bit icky to me, to have young students engaging in conversations with the dead. I find it just creepy, right? But that's me. Other people find it totally acceptable and ethical and exciting. Even if the chatbots are trained on primary source materials, you need to engage in these critical conversations about whether or not it's right to use this type of tool. And I think for me, part of what I'm feeling here is I think I have a hard time with it because of the role of age, right? Some of these AI tools seem like, I don't want a second grader talking to Abraham Lincoln and thinking that Lincoln is real. But then that right there reminds me of the next idea, which is question number 6 to ask. What is developmentally appropriate? Most AI tools have been designed by grownups for grownups. So as we use AI tools, we need to ask, what does a child this age need? And has this tool been developed in a way that is, well, developmentally appropriate? Consider the role of AI tutors. We need to know exactly how the tools adapt to developmental needs of our students. If you hired a human tutor, you would want to know, do you have experience working with fifth graders, for example? And the same is true of AI tutors. We need to ask, has this AI been modified so it's actually developmentally appropriate? Has it been trained on data in a way where it connects to human development? Now, I'm actually encouraged by some of the tools I've seen. When I did my interview with Sal Khan from the Khan Academy, I actually felt like he had a really good answer to this idea of making sure that the tools were developmentally appropriate and that they were really intentional about designing in a way that connected to age level appropriateness. The 7th question to ask is, are my students ready to use AI responsibly? So we can't just assume that students are going to use it ethically, right? As educators, we're going to need to model what AI looks like and how we do it in a way that's responsible. This starts with providing clear guidelines for how and when we'll use AI in an assignment. So I share in the blog post, again, at spencereducation.com, you'll find the blog post. I share this process, this continuum from machine to human generated, and it's color-coded with various levels. So students can look at this and say, all right, where am I allowed and not allowed to use AI on this assignment? But honestly, a lot of that's going to come down to the discussions you have and the class conversations. It also helps to teach students about the nature of AI. We're in this cultural moment where AI is treated like it's magic. The most popular AI tool I see in schools right now is literally called Magic School. We use magical sparkles to represent AI integration. So if you think about the symbol that we use on a regular basis, it's the three little sparkles. Again, like it's magic. But when we treat AI as magical, we fail to grasp how machine learning works and that it really is a set of complex algorithms. It's not thinking, it's not feeling. Even if it acts curious, it cannot be curious. Even if it acts empathetic, it cannot be empathetic. And so it's really important that students grasp how AI works. I'm not saying that they code AI and they know deep down like the every aspect, but I am saying that students need to know, I'm actually interacting with a series of scripts here, not with a person. That's important at a young age. And that we help them see the pros and cons, the capabilities, but also the limitations of AI. It's also important that we clarify the bias and inaccuracies or hallucinations of AI. And one of my favorite ways of doing that is through using a prompt engineering process like the FACTS cycle. Again, you can check it out on my website, a whole process of how you can teach students to use the FACTS cycle. And note that the goal here is to teach students to slow down when they're using AI and to be more deliberate and mindful. So mindful, so demure. Did you hear what I just did? I know. It's an out-of-date meme, but you get the idea. You want them to be deliberate and mindful as they use AI. In the end, there is no easy solution to the integration of AI, but when we use it and model it ethically, and when we ask these hard questions, we set ourselves up for a place where we can be more intentional about AI integration. And ultimately, that's the goal that we should be striving for. Hey, would you do me a favor? If you like this podcast, would you consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you listen to this podcast? That would mean the world to me. Also, maybe tell a friend about it. Word of mouth is one of the best ways for people to find out about this podcast. And again, if you want to check out that AI hub, you can go to spencereducation.com. So thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.